December 11, 2020, it's the Walk from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Walk for Pedro show. Happy Friday. Brother Matt and the Love Grotto a couple miles south because we're still in quitting quarantino mode, but I'm not totally man alone because through the amazing invention of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, I got Mr. Stephen Bernstein aboard from Nyack, New York. Welcome aboard, Stephen.
Thank you, Mr. Watt, and really an honor to be on your show, and I really mean that.
You're most kind, and we got to give credit right away to Stevie Bono for making the connect.
He absolutely did.
Actually, Stephen, he didn't make he didn't make the connect with me and you because I met you many, many years ago.
Oh, man. I met you at some random, like, indie music, like, indie records guys round table somewhere, right?
I should tell the people what we heard. We start off the show with John Coltrane live in Seattle doing Tapestry and Sound. And then the Harlem Experiment with Harlem River Drive.
Yeah,
I can't even remember the name of that comp. But anyway, we've been musical colleagues for a long time. But to be on the show, it's a big honor, Stephen. Thank you so much for coming aboard.
Thank you.
Now, I want the listeners to find out about your journey through music. So please tell me your earliest musical recollection.
Well, the earliest stuff I really remember is the radio. Like a lot of people our age, man. I just remember like being in the backseat of the car and like sing along with the radio. And when it's funny because no one's ever asked me that. At all the fucking
Why you're on the Watt from Pedro show.
Yeah, man. That's really the real first musical stuff is just listening on the radio and sing along to stuff.
Now, Steven,
yeah, that's how it started.
Steven, where was this car driving and who was driving it?
Well, my folks were driving. This has to be when I was a little kid in Boston. My dad had just gotten out of medical school and had his first job. And yeah, we were living in Boston. And that's kind of what I remember. Like we had like one of blue station wagons and back seat just does the radio and you close your eyes and sing along, man.
Now,
you were the singer.
My guess, Stephen, it was AM radio.
Oh, yeah. AM. I'm thinking, I was born in 61, so I'm thinking like 65, like 4 years old, 5 years old.
Okay, I was born in 57, so I'm a little ahead of you, but not much, so we're kind of in the same era.
Right.
And AM radio, we got to tell the listeners, AM radio was a lot more open in those days. There was all kinds of musics on it, right?
It could be anything. Yeah. And then you know what's funny, man? There was like this Peter, Paul, and Mary, like da 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 da, and it was and I just remember it's kind of scary. But that song, like I always, when that song came on the radio, "Dads are my friend."
You're talking about their version of Bobby Dylan's.
Yeah. And I remember, like, thinking that was, like, this cool kind of spooky sound. It sounded like the Civil War to me for some reason. I can't believe you're getting this out of me, Walt.
Well, somebody told me once that Bobby Dylan actually stole that from some Irish song.
Let me tell you something. I'll do a quick Bob Dylan thing. I don't know much about him, right? I know a lot about him. People always were like, man, you got to listen to Bob Dylan. All my smartest friends were really into Bob Dylan. And he was like, did you ever ask, because I played with Levon for 8 years, did you ever ask Levon about it, Bob Dylan? I'm like, no, why? I mean, he didn't talk about that stuff, and I don't really care. I mean, I know it matters so much to people, but just never sound, I understood that the words meant a lot to people, but I could never get into the music. And then I had a couple jobs where people hired me to arrange and perform his music, and then when you start to like take it up for someone like me, when you start to take it apart, you see why people are so into it. But when you look at the forms I'm trying to get at, there's a lot of references to this Irish music, to kind of ragtime music. He would, you know, I think he did that a lot. He would take some song he kind of knew and put these amazing long stories to them.
We can't neglect to mention Brother Woody.
Yes, right. Well, yes. Absolutely.
I mean, he had a myth going where he was kind of like the fucking orphan son of him from the Dust Bowl and shit. Look, I want to talk about the pad you grew up in. Was there any musical?
Okay.
Was there any musical instruments?
There were not instruments, but my parents always had records. And I was thinking about that because I was thinking about you and thinking about the Minutemen and thinking about rock music because I came late to rock music. And my parents were the kind of parents that had mainly, like, you know, some jazz records. They had, like, Ella Fitzgerald sings the Duke Ellington songbook, Joe Williams sings Count Basie Swings, some Dixieland.
The point is, they were listeners and not really players.
Right, they were listeners.
That's important. That shit's really important. But I want to get at where you got on the fucking, you know, horn and shit. What about at school? Were you in the marching band or the choir?
No, I'm from Berkeley, California, and we didn't have marching bands because marching bands were seen as militaristic. So I had this really amazing upbringing where.
So let me get this straight, Stephen.
Yeah.
Boston to Berkeley. There was a move. The family made a move.
Yeah. In 68, my dad, I guess the army had paid for his medical school. So the deal was when you get your degree, you work at like some sort of base, you know, for a couple of years to pay off your medical school.
Yeah.
And so you know, we were real East Coast Jews. Like, no, everyone was from the East Coast of my family. You know, East Coast or the Midwest, the East part of the Midwest, like Cleveland, places like that, just typical Jewish places of that era. And my dad gets this gig in Alameda where there's a Navy base. So, man, imagine this. My parents with their three little kids move in the middle of the revolution to Berkeley in 1968. Like, I went to Black Panther summer camp my first summer there.
Oak Town, baby. Let me tell you about Alameda. My pop was stationed there aboard the USS Enterprise, and not the one with Captain Kirk.
No, I had one of my birthday parties on the USS Enterprise when I was 11 years old. That's like my dad got us a little tour of the Enterprise.
Was one of the machinists, mate, nine decks down in the engine room. Now this had eight reactors. You know, the new ones have two reactors, but this was our very first new carrier, so they were just trying out stuff.
I didn't know the Enterprise was,
It was our first nuclear aircraft carrier. She had a sister ship, which we called the John F. Kennedy, but it was not nuke. It was still a diesel thing. So the first one is the Enterprise. She got retired a few years ago. CVN-65. I want to play Valentino.
We'll be right back.
Bob from Pedro Show. We heard Sex Mob with Valentino. After that, Guy by Voice, Bob Pollard's got a brand new album. Another one. This guy, man, he can crank them. Time Without Look, and then 38 Angry Tigers, D.C. area, Piano Ted, and the unit associated with his cat, Bomas Prendon, with Silence, Carl M. V. Wow from Brighton, England, with Apathy Truth. Ain't that the truth? Followed by Harper Roos and St. George, which has got, this is from late 60s, to kind of the era Stephen Bernstein here is talking about. Delia Derbyshire, big pioneer electronic music people. And then finally, a Prince cover from Sex Mob, Sign of the Times. Back to your journey. So, in school, there's no marching bands, but there might have been choir, and there might have been a jazz band.
What we had. Okay. We had the first integrated schools in the United States, and we had the first jazz program. So I started in the jazz band in fifth grade. So we started playing improvising. Like, not in jazz band, meaning we were improvising, not we played just some corny jazz-style music. No, they were teaching us to improvise in the fifth grade and to think using our ears and our little spirits.
I'm curious, Stephen, what made you gravitate to what you started playing?
I just think that feeling when you're first a kid in fifth grade.
No, I mean the machine, the actual
instrument. Oh, the trumpet. Oh, this is actually kind of an interesting story. We had gone back to Boston for 1 year. So fourth grade, I'm back in Boston, and it's a new school. And, you go to that, like, whatever, first week of school, there's an assembly for the fourth graders. And they had, like, a slideshow. They say, okay, this is the year we start band. And they had a little slideshow with the different instruments. And I saw the trumpet. And I think because back then, so this has to be 1970 now, maybe early 71, I don't know, but right in between those two. Right before then, Louis Armstrong had been on TV a lot because of Hello Dolly and those little, and Mac the Knife. I think really Hello Dolly. And I think he made an impression on me, like as a kid somehow, like seeing him. So when I saw the trumpet, I thought about that guy. And I came home and told my mom, I said, listen, I think I want to play the trumpet for fourth grade. So my mom took me to a little music store. I remember went to downtown Boston, went up the stairs, and she rented me a trumpet. That's how
it
started.
So you guys, yeah, but then you go back to California, and now you're in the Oaktown jazz class with the trumpet.
Yeah, with the trumpet, and the guy's telling us, oh, here's these three notes. Ba, ba, ba. He'd play them. We'd answer them. Ba, ba, ba. He'd play back. Be, ba, ba. He'd answer. Be, di, di. He'd go, da, 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 da. We'd go, da, 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 da. I mean, he taught us to play like that. You start to get this feeling like, oh, man, here's something I have, like, a little control. Here's something I can make happen. You know, it's all, everything seems so out of control when you're a kid. You don't know what's going on. Like, and so it's like, oh, man, I can do this, and it's fun. And I just got the music bug, and it was just fun to do.
Now, you said you came to rock and roll late. So I'm imagining maybe after school, you don't do the thing like the basement band, the garage band, the bedroom band, because that's a, kind of a rock and roll thing, right? So you're
well, check this out. Check this out. When summer, there's a guy, Peter Applebaum, who I still play with all the time, who's on half my records, and I'm on a bunch of his records, that he was one of those kids who was not just a prodigy, but he had a good organizational skill for a little kid. He had a band. And when after sixth grade, he said, well, you sound pretty good. Here's four records to listen to. Listen to these four records this summer, and then I want you to be in my band come in September. And we had rehearsals, and we played kind of like he'd write little charts, and it was like a jazz, funky little jazz band. We played like the theme from Sanford and Son, and we played a little jazz version of Rock Around the Clock, because that was like during the 50s revival, that was always on TV. We could play that on our horn. Like little, the bass player knew how to play Feeling All Right. And I didn't even know what Feeling All Right was. All I know is a bass player would play this bass line. If I pushed the first button down and then no buttons, I could make something that sounded good over it. We used to play that. We'd play little parties for grown-ups and stuff like that, and little school assemblies. And if they were opening up a new playground, we'd get a call and do the gig.
Now, across the bay there.
Yes, sir.
Was a DJ named Sly Stone who put together a band. And he had a lady on trumpet.
That's right. And so that sound of that trumpet solo, I gave you one of the songs from MTO Plays Fly. So that, there you talk about Cynthia and that music. His interest in Dane, man, most life things. You know, I didn't really, there's certain music you hear when you're a kid that just goes into you. So that really, that music was from when I was in second and third grade, but it was on second, third grade, all the time. And then you've kind of forgot about it because life moved on, you know, and by the time I'm in high school, Sly's kind of off the scene and, you know, it's more like P-Funk and Stevie Wonder and that thing. And then I come back from college and Woodstock is on TV. I'm watching Woodstock and Sly and the Family Stone come on and I see him play and I start weeping. I start weeping watching them. And I brought back these memories of being a kid and hearing that music and what people used to look like back then and how they acted. And then I got into this huge, and then when I got to, and then when I started playing in New York, the album Fresh was very influential, like 10 years later. So I got into a huge thing with Sly, and yes, Cynthia, and I met her once. And as you can tell from the way I talk, I have no trouble talking to people. I'll meet the most, and I've worked with the most famous rock musicians in the world. And it doesn't matter to me. It's like, dude, you're the most famous rock musician in the world. What the fuck do I care? It's like, you're not Duke Ellington, dude. It's like, yeah, I mean, you're great. Whatever. I met her. I got so nervous. I was like sweating. And I met her at a music store. I had my slide trumpet out, and her and Jerry were there. And I said, oh, and I also played the slide trumpet. And I played the slide song. And I was so like, I couldn't get, my breath wasn't right. And Jerry just looked at me, you know, because Cynthia and Jerry got the message to say. Yep. So Jerry said to me, well, that kind of sounded like a slide tune.
Now, we just lost her not too long ago.
Yeah, I think 2 years ago she died of cancer. Yeah.
Now,
one of her daughters was Sly for a while, was leading the band and might still be leading some sort of band.
Oh, that's beautiful. Now we got to fill in a gap. Mr. Applebaum's band in high school, or
yeah,
it's on the West Coast, right?
Right.
Well, how do you get to New York City?
Here's the deal. So I'm the first son of a Jewish doctor, right? It's bad enough I want to be a musician, right? So, and I, of course, want to get to New York. That's just me. Only way you go to New York is if you go to an Ivy League school. So I was kind of smart. I mean, I wasn't like a genius, but I got pretty fairly good grades. So I went to Columbia. So I said, well, that'll get me to New York. So I went to Columbia University. And that is actually, believe it or not, where I got introduced to rock and roll.
Okay, tell me how.
Because, like, so in Berkeley, you know, you can imagine Berkeley in the 70s. I mean, really, like, the music of our culture, there's only one high school. It's totally integrated. It's a big high school. And so it's like, you know, Stevie Wonder and P-Funk. And I'm sure there were some people listening to rock music. I mean, there were obviously people who would go see The Dead, but that almost seemed like a local band that people would just, you know, who liked to, like, trip, would go see on the weekends, you know. It wasn't so much, like, I didn't know anyone listened to, like, the Rolling Stones or anything like that, you know. And you go to Columbia, and you're with these East Coast kids, and they all went, a lot of them went to these, you know, those Andover, these, like, prep schools, and where rock and roll culture, that's the thing. It's like, everyone loved the Rolling Stones, and then the really smart people liked Eno, and people knew about the Talking Heads, and the first Elvis Costello record had come out. So you're hanging out with people at the beginning of school, and that's what's in their record collection. And they're saying, yeah, you know, and people are playing like The Doors and all kinds of stuff. And it's a funny story because it was obviously to those people's where I first heard The Minutemen. And someone put that on, like, now that's him. That I can relate to, man. I still don't know why. I've been trying to remember what that moment. I remember the moment of someone playing me The Minutemen. Because you got these cool friends that know different music than you. So they're always trying to turn you on, you know?
Well, starting with Buzzer Hal, we used a trumpet on the product, and then there's a couple on Project Mersch, I think there's every song's got trumpet. So D Boom was really
right
into that. But I want to know about you.
Okay.
In your first rock band at Columbia.
Wow. I was in a band called the Malibu Dolphins. Do you even know that that existed, or did you just say that?
I'm asking you, Stephen. You're the guest.
Yes. Okay. So there was a band called the Malibu Dolphins, and that's M-I-A-L-I-B-O-O. And it was kind of like you know, they're the whole, these guys were really into no wave. There was a guy who just played, you know, he had a radio amplifier, a record, you know, amplifier from your stereo, and he took it and made an output of it, and he would switch it. It was like a sine wave instrument, you know. So there was like, you know, two electric guitars, an electric bass, and this guy playing sine wave sounds. And they, when you hang out with them, they not only were playing that kind of music, but they would also play like early rock music. They would play things like I had never heard, like Bo Diddley and Roy Orbison. It was kind of like these artifacts of the 50s, you know, and they're turning me on to all this music. And we played CBs, and we played, like, we. I don't know if you ever played A7. That might, I don't know if you got to New York early enough to do that. But,
yeah,
you know, we played
Atlanta, yeah.
Yeah.
That was more of a hardcore place.
Well, it was hardcore and punk funk. But, like, yeah, or like we played, like, you know, with the Beastie Boys when they were still a punk band. We did
shows with them. And actually, A7 was big with Bad Brains.
Right, and Bad Brains were down there. So I'm in that world, and then I'm in the East. And then that leads, again, to the East Village world where, of course, that's suddenly you're really connecting with, like, the Bad Brains and those people. But the first people that taught me about rock music really were these people at Columbia who, like, that was their lingua franca, man. That was their thing. And like I said, a lot of it didn't really, like, I'll tell you one, man, that took me 20, 30 years to figure out how to listen to was The Who. People would play The Who for me. I'd be like, now, I don't even know what I'm listening. Like, is this even music? Like, what is it?
Can I tell you about the bass man? Did you know that he was a French horn player? And Pictures
of Lily
has a French horn solo from John Entwistle. Look, we're at the end of the first hour. December 11, 2020, Dishwap Pedro Show special guest, Stephen Bernstein. Hold tight for hour two. December 11, 2020, it's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
If it be your will that I speak no more, and my voice be still as it was before, I will speak no more. I shall abide until I am spoken for. If it be your will, if it be your will, that there is a voice from the broken hill, and I will sing to you from this broken hill. No, your praises, they shall ring. And if it be your will to let me sing,
arms akimbo. I'm gonna punch my way out of this limbo.
Window pane, every torn sleeping bag, every boarded up doorway, every bar fight, every want and regret, but sometimes the night and I walk home between broken glass, kicking cans over concrete, burning and rolled fags between terraced houses as they lean against one another, holding up sky. Between the crossfire of conversations beneath 5 a.m. streetlights, I pause and I breathe. I can breathe sometimes. The night and I make love behind abandoned flats where the cats sit and cradle dead pigeons and rats, where the overflowing gutter reflects the underabsorbed skies, a puddle of stars blurred by foot and vision lost to sunrise. Sometimes the night clings to my clothes, stinking of whiskey and rain, and God only knows I want this. Only they know. A moment so brief, so fleeting, morning dew. Me and the darkness are just passing through.
join the Swiss Army because they haven't got any guns. Just wee knives with corkscrews and tweezers. And an awl. What's an awl for? What's an awl for?
Oh,
one child grows up to be somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them. You see it in the blood.
Pivo show. We start off the second hour with Anoni, If It Be Your Will, something live. featuring Mr. Stephen Bernstein. Sam Bennett, after that, from Tokyo, Show Me the Way to the River. Sophia Safaram and Christopher Gregory. Hearing some noise over there. Sometimes at Night, Private Party, Hoyne and Augusta from Good Luck. No, Good Fuck. Big difference. Well, kind of. Neutrals with Swiss, Love is of Essence from Tollum. And finally, Family Affair. That's some sly. From the Millennial Territory Orchestra featuring... Oh, no. So, okay, continue on here. So you had to figure out the who.
Right, and I did. And then one day, like, I was on the radio, like, you know, we were driving and with my wife, and I hear I Can See for Miles, and I'm suddenly like, oh, now I hear what this band is. And I went and listened to a bunch of records, like, okay, now I can hear it, man. Now I can hear what these guys are talking about.
Yeah,
but it was so funny because if you're like, if jazz is your language, if there's certain things that you expect to hear and you don't hear them, you don't have your like signposts.
Of course, of course. But you know, I got to tell you, pretty Kano, I could see for miles like one note.
Yeah.
And here, and here, and here, and here. It's yeah. Pretty Kano. But you know, some jazz went into that stuff. The Giant has a harsh tab. You know, when they got tired of all the chord changes, they settled on some modal stuff, and they
absolutely
get these temas going right, kind of blue and this stuff. So, you know, at the end of the day, isn't music just music? And all these names are kind of burden.
Well, I totally feel that, you know, and I think, you know, I've spent my life doing that, and that it. And as funny as I'm getting older, it's starting to like...
No, less younger, not older.
Okay, less younger. Yeah. As I have acquired a larger and larger body of work through the years, it's kind of helped, I think, move it along. I honestly feel that because like our generation, we started to say, yeah, it's just music. We also have less obstacles, and now it's really amazing with less gatekeepers. It's not like there's a record store anymore where someone's going to go into the rock section or the jazz section or the oldies section or the funk section. You know, it's just kind of music that you can access as you wish almost. And so all that's really changing. And I had a very interesting talk with a great older drummer yesterday. He really liked this thing I had to say, which is to me, almost all music is the same except the drum beats change. Like, I don't see at this point really what the difference is between anything.
Clothes.
You know. It's like, yeah, you know, it's just, what's the drums playing? That's all that's like, that's what you're
playing. Or maybe drums. There ain't a drum. If you've listened to Dose, you notice there's no right. Drums. But, yeah, drums are fucking very, very fundamental. But, you know,
yeah.
Get this. Some cat was telling me about uploading some music to their band camp page, and it said you had to pick some kind of category to define
right.
It. But hopefully there's must be a choice that says nothing.
Right.
Look, I want to play...
Or everything.
Or everything, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I was getting a little Buddhist on you there, Steven.
Yeah.
Look, I want to play some Diaspora Soul.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. the shock with teeth like razors, and he wears them in his face. And McHeath has got a knife, but not in such an obvious place. Now see the shock, how red his fins are, as he slashes at his prey. Oh, Mac the knife wears fancy gloves, which give the minimum away. Bob the Thames, turbid waters, man abruptly tumbled. So many wealthy men. Well, Mac the Knife acquired his cash box. God knows how and God knows when. Oh, Jenny Towler turned up lately with a knife stuck through her breast. Well, Mac, he walks the nonchalantly unimpressed. Where is Alphonse? Delete the cabman. Well, who can get that story clear? Well, someone may lay information, but McHeath has no. And the child bride in her 90s, who's assailant still at large, violated in her slumbers. Maggie, how much did you charge? And that ghastly fire in Soho, 7 children. Crowd stands Mac the Knife, but he ain't his, and he don't know.
Off from Pete Rush Show. Start off that chunk of music with The Asperger's Soul, one of Stephen Bernstein's projects. Annie Mammon. And then, I hope I pronounced that right, Jerome Parker Wells out of St. Louis with Try It Out. Sporadic Spontaneous with Dusty Receiver. Hellbat. That's sax man, flute man, Vince Maroney, but he likes to play drums. He did a pair of Flyers with me and Tom Watson, and that's his project. Immer, D.C. area with New Tribes, and finally, Mac the Knife which is Spanish Fly featuring Nick Cave. Bobby Darin had a big hit with that.
Oh, yeah. Good. Man, Bobby Darin's arrangement on that is so hip. And know what? Check this out.
Bring it.
I think that might be a Jack Nietzsche arrangement. I gotta look at my Jack Nietzsche book stuff, but I get, oh no, no, it's not. It's that later one. Bobby Darin had another hit, which kind of did that same thing with the raising modulations that, that Jack Nietzsche did for him. I'm sorry. So maybe Jack Nietzsche didn't do that. Are you a Jack Nietzsche man?
I think he did Harvest.
He absolutely did.
In a barn, right? In a barn, and maybe raped somebody's girlfriend.
Yeah, and he did a lot of things like that.
Too. Okay, okay.
I'm obsessed with him, and whenever I go to L.A., I ask people.
I shouldn't have brought that up. I shouldn't have brought that. I'm sorry.
No, that was a little dirty. But, yeah. But it's funny you said you're going to go Buddhist on me because of nothing. And my trumpet teacher, who was one of the older trumpet players in New York, he had been working. He had replaced Harry James in Benny Goodman's band in 1940, and he spent the summer of 40 or 41 in the Benny Goodman's band at what was called like Palumbo Beach, this famous Palomar Beach, something like that. And all the actors and actresses would come, and he started studying Zen with Suzuki, the guy who brought Zen Buddhism to America. So, and he went on this incredible career where he was at NBC Radio when they were doing all the original radio shows, and then he went to NBC Television. He did, you know, all the Perry Como show and Steve Allen show and the Tonight Show and Patti Page show. But he was a bit of Buddhist, like, ever since his 20s, and he would give me Buddhist books after the lesson. I said, what do you do with a Buddhist book? He said, just, you know, if you're in the bathroom or something, just, you know, open it up and read a page or something like that, whatever. And I'm, like, young, and I'm just questioning everything. I said, I don't know, man. I open up a page, and it says, Buddha is a dry piece. Buddha is everywhere. God is everywhere. Buddha is everywhere. Buddha is a dry piece of dog shit. And I was like, now this I can relate to. Okay, now we're talking about it. If you're really going to be saying Buddha is everywhere, God is everywhere, then yeah, God is a dry because it's everywhere.
Well, let's enlighten the fucking, because Buddha means enlightened person.
Right, right.
One of the main devices, it's called the koan. Yes. And what you just described there was a koan. And one of the most famous koans is if you see Buddha on the road, kill him.
Right.
Now, these things, this ain't about your journey of music, but maybe it is.
No.
But yeah, maybe in some ways. But what it means is it's a riddle that ain't supposed to be answered because you'll defeat the idea of it because you want to be wondering. You want to put your mind into wondering because that's when you're really awake. When you arrive at an answer, you go back to sleep.
Right. Yeah. Searching is that's it. That's the journey, the search.
Now, John Coltrane said, and this is one reason why I play him always, all my shows, 19 and a half years I've been doing Watt for Pedro show. He said, all musicians are after some kind of truth. He says, musician can tell when something's phony.
Yeah.
And I always dug that, Stephen. I always dug that.
Yeah. No, and I really appreciate that you start every show with John Coltrane. But I think it's a beautiful thing about our generation that we were able to have that as a early source of light and inspiration. How lucky we were to like reverberations. Like even Coltrane was right before us in a sense. He reverberated. I was thinking about that. Like when I moved to New York in 79, Jimi Hendrix had been dead for 10 years, but he was still like reverberating through New York. You know what I'm saying? You could feel it. And Coltrane's the same way. Coltrane left the planet, but that when we were coming up, he wasn't on the planet, but his reverberations were so, so strong.
It was so strong when Pettibone played him for me for the first time. I thought he was a punk rocker. I thought he was an older one, but I thought he was actually a punk rocker.
Right, right. That's unbelievable.
He played me Ascension.
Oh, well, in a sense, it's all coming from the same place.
I thought it was the germs.
Yeah, the germs.
Stephen, we're at the end of the second hour, December 11, 2020 edition. Wap Pedro show, you special guest. Hold tight for hour three. December 11, 2020. It's the third hour of the Wap Pedro show.
duty, duty. Guilty, I'm not with guilt. It runs through me like a rain through steel. Guilty, my mind won't leave me alone. My teeth all rotten, my lips start to foam, cause I'm so guilty. Guilty, guilty. Ooh, guilty. What did I say? What did I say? What did I do? Did I ever do it to you? Don't turn your back. I can't look you in the eye. Yes, I'm guilty as charged. Guilty, 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 guilty. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do what? Such a child, willful child, guilty. What can I do? I do it to you, but I do it to me too.
Thank you. switch up and spin around on your toes. Let me see you strike a kung fu pose. It's not ninjutsu, not a kido, not a taibo, not karate. It's kung fu dollars.
Not you that do, tell me what you up to. In a the club I do the dance all kung fu. Watch the old woman in a the corner, she a get rude. In a the club I do the dance all kung fu.
Kung fu, kung fu, kung fu. Rip it, rip it. Right, right.
Walk for Pedro show start off the third hour with Guilty, Lou Reed featuring Ornette Coleman. Tragic Comedy after that with Jam Number 4, Fat Gandolf with a cover of John Lennon's Cold Turkey. Finally, Lee Scratch Perry with Dancehall Kung Fu. People, you ain't hearing, I'm playing these musics right at the beginning and end of each chunk. They're all featuring Stephen Bernstein, but his name ain't in the names of the bands. Tell me about this thing you got into being an arranger.
Right. And it was one of these things I always kind of naturally did it. I didn't really study it or anything. I mean, I took one class in college. But the funny thing what happened with my very first recording in New York was with this band, Sahib Sarbib, and the multinational big band. It was a very, like, kind of large avant-garde band. And Butch Morris, who actually is from L.A. too, who was a great cornet player and writer and arranger, someone I had met when I was young. And when I got to New York, you know, I re-met him because he had lived in the Bay Area when I was a kid. And I had told him that I liked this one band that he played with. And he said, man, why don't you just, I haven't been playing the horn. They have a record date. Why don't you just go to the record date? So I'm like 19 years old. I'm living, it's the summer. I'm living in a dorm at Columbia. And I just show up and I say, yeah, Butch Morris told me to come to this record date. And it's like all of like the avant-garde scene, younger East Village avant-garde scene. And, you know, and Roy Campbell, Ahmed Abdullah, David Soulson, and Lee Rozzi. And it's like this crazy scene. And, but I kind of, having grown up around that kind of music, I understood it, fit in. And this guy, Dave Soulson, the baritone player, and again, these guys are, maybe they're 6, 7 years older than me, but when you're 19, it seems like a lot, like, you know. And he was in a cab, and the cab driver was a Haitian guy and said, hey, man, you have a horn with you. Could you do horn arrangements? And Dave said, no, but I think I have a friend who does. And Dave called me and said, hey, man, this cab driver gave me his number. He said he needs a horn arrangement. Can you write a horn arrangement? And I said, sure, I can write a horn arrangement. So the first horn, professional horn arrangement I did was for a Haitian record, a compa record. And then I realized I had like this natural thing. Like I just knew somehow how to, in my head, like I played enough arrangements. It made sense to me how you would do it. And then in my bands, and then people just started, and I was working with John Lurie for a long time. And I was doing his arrangements for him, for his movies, and then through Hal. And then I realized because I had grown up among these guys who loved rock music and Hal Wilner would always want to, you know, have horn arrangements, but not all the arrangers could feel the rock. Like, they didn't have a love for the rock music. And I had learned to have, like, a real love for it. Like, it existed in the same part of my soul. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So when I was... Now when I heard Lou Reed, like, I knew what was beautiful about Lou Reed, even though I knew it wasn't Duke Ellington. It didn't have to be. It should be. It was Lou Reed, you know what I'm saying? And so I was able, through Hal, to start working with all these people, and then more people knew I could do it, and I ended up being a person people would call, saying, knowing that, like, I could bring something special to rock music that comes from the jazz world, without like superimposing something that's not supposed to be there.
Well, that's trippy. And how do you know it's supposed to be there?
Because I can feel it.
Okay. You know, okay. You're saying like kind of a intuitive sense.
Yeah, I can intuitively feel like what's supposed to be there. It's not like, I think a lot of people like who are, come from the jazz world when it comes to arranging for rock music, they don't. Because they don't have the love, you know what I'm saying? They don't. You have to love it.
I'm curious, Stephen. What's your take on the Dan?
On who?
The Dan.
The Dan? I don't know what that is.
Donald Becker, Walter Fagan.
Oh, Steely Dan.
No, Walter Becker.
Yeah. Oh, so here's a funny thing. Like, I know I have a lot of friends who have been in that group. And are in that group, and I know Donald Fagan pretty well. I've done recordings with him, and I met him through Levon. He's Amy Helms' stepdad. I've hung out with him, you know, gone
actually. Donald Fagan is with the ex-wife, right? Former wife.
Right. Yeah. He's with Levon. Levon's. Well, I don't know if they were ever married. I don't know if she was ever married, but she was Amy's Yeah, she was amazing. Libby Titus, amazing. And actually, she was Libby and then Dr. John and then with Fagan. She's been with Fagan forever. And she's an artist too. She made a record. Anyway, you know, I always tell people, and even Donald Fagan, and when I talk to him, I say, man, the funny thing is, like, I don't own any Steely Dan records because I never had to, because it was, you just heard it on the radio all the time. And like, why would I need, and he laughed, and because he knows, like, you know, again, like, even though I'm a big music guy, like, it's been, like, slow getting into everything, and I really like Steely Dan. I just never owned any of their records, but I've heard them so much, and I have all these friends who play with them, and I got one of their records, but I know how great they are.
I was wondering because they had some pretty rock and roll lead guitar. I think Rick Derringer plays on Countdown to Ecstasy. I want to play those something to switch gears. Marianne Faithful.
Could be so sad. with gloom everywhere. I sit and I stare. I know that I'll soon go mad in my solitude. I'm afraid, dear Lord above, send me back my thank you.
For Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Marianne Faithful with Solitude. Mike Cooper with Miniature Number 10. Then Tatsuhisa Yamamoto with Ashiato 2, because we heard one last episode. This is the other part of it. And finally, the Millennial Territory Orchestra with Darlin' Nikki. Yeah, where can people find you on the internet, Stephen?
StephenBernstein.net, and I'm on Facebook, and I might have a...
Have I been pronouncing it wrong?
Yeah, but that's cool.
Because over there in Europe, the E-I is Ein, and the I-E is Ein.
I know, it's so funny. I thought it was... Sometimes with some people I say something, but the way you talk, it's so poetic that it made sense with the rhythm of your talking, so... And Henry Butler, who I had a band with for 8 years, he knew me for 30 years. He heard everyone else pronounce my name. He pronounced it, and on trumpet, Stephen Bernstein. Yeah. And finally, I said to him, Henry, I pronounced it Stephen Bernstein. He goes, yes, but the German pronunciation is Stein. And I said, Henry, my family's not from Germany.
No, but you got to understand, Stephen, Yiddish. It's got some German in it, okay.
I know. But my family, I have no...
I understand. No, you got the right to pronounce your name any way you want. I mean, why does my name have two T's? What?
Right.
To make sure it's ended? Yeah. Right. I mean, it's just the way it is. So I apologize. Yeah.
That's
so,
okay.
So people, StevenBernstein.com?
.net.
.net, sorry, yeah, .net, yeah, yeah. To find information, because this man has got he's knee-deep in the shit, okay? music, it's beautiful what you're doing, really. And what's your plan right now? You're probably doing a lot of composing, maybe trading
Well, files. Here's the deal. I was one of those guys who, during one period of my life, I made a lot of records. You know, back when, you know, you get a little money and make a record. And then when it got the whole thing about paying for your own record and asking other people, I kind of didn't make that many records. I still made records, but not as much. And then I got a beautiful grant, and I recorded in the studio for 4 days, thinking, well, I don't really know if this needs to be a record. I just want to document. And I decided to put it all out. So I'm going to have four LPs coming out on Royal Potato Family of Millennial Territory Orchestra, Millennial Territory Orchestra with Cat Russell singing, Hot Nine with Medeski and Arturo Farrell, and then another Millennial Territory Orchestra record, and then Sex Mob and Scotty Hard got back together, and we made a new record, so I got that record's going to come out, so I like five records I'm working on, and then, you know, so it's a heavy lift. I've just been mixing and thinking and processing, and I'm lucky enough to, you know, I have a low overhead, I live a pretty simple life, my wife has a gig that she can do from home, I get a little unemployment, so basically I'm living like a fairly beautiful artistic life right now, man. Where like, there's no business to worry about. There's no gigs to get to. There's no anxiety about gigs you do or don't have. And so you can just focus on positive things. And I know the world's going to hell, but that I can't do much about that.
It always has been. It goes through cycles, you know. But this vaccine's coming. We gotta not be totally insane about it.
No,
it's been a big honor to have you on the show.
Thank and you, really, I can't wait to play some music on stage with you.
Yeah, but also, when these albums come out, why don't you come back on the show so we can play them and talk about them?
Let's do it, Watt. Thank you, sir. That's awesome.
Absolutely. People, it's been the December 11, 2020 edition of the Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.